Do you like vampires? Then please check out Colleen of Lotta Tale of the Damned, a brand new Kickstarter coming August 15th with art by Tim Vigil, Matt Slay, and variant covers by Chandra Akerblom, Heather Rose, and many more. You can find a link over on the Vlada of Dracula Tale page or one of the variant cover artists. Please consider following the Kickstarter today, which is a sequel to Vlada of Dracula Tale. If you missed Vlada of Dracula Tale, books from Vlada can be picked up on the Kickstarter to help the campaign reach its goal. Again, the Kickstarter launches August 15th. It can be found on Kickstarter at Colleen the Vampire or on the Vlada of Dracula Tale page social media, on Twitter, Facebook, or the Radio Horror page or Instagram. Again, please consider helping us get to our goal of $7,000. Thank you.
This is Adrian Paul from Highlander, and you're listening to the Dead TV Podcast.
Welcome to the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast dedicated to any and all canceled TV shows in the sci-fi, fantasy, and horror genre. I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
And tonight we're covering the next couple episodes of Blade, the series. Mr. Seneca has the plot synopsis for us. If you make sure you tune into the entire podcast, because at the very end of the show, we're going to have a potentially great special guest star. We'll find out more information later this week.
Our great guest star is also in this episode, so stay tuned.
He's one of the main characters. How about that? That's the hint. It's not Kirk Sticky Smith Jones.
No, we can't afford that.
Not $1,000 worth. But what you can do is pledge $1,000 to my upcoming Kickstarter August 4th, just FYI.
All right. Blade, the series. Season 1, Episode 4, Bloodlines. Blade is caught by a group of vampires called Bad Blood, a group that Blade first turned. Originally aired Wednesday, July 19th, 2006. This episode is getting interesting because you actually get a little bit of the background of what Blade did as a child, and it wasn't very good.
You do, but I think these characters sucked. Great characters.
They're not in it for very long. They get killed rather quickly.
Well, except for the leader.
Yeah.
Blade walks upstairs slowly because we have to do slow man walk. And the doc shoots himself when he sees Blade coming in front of a pregnant woman. This is the second time Blade has busted in on something to do with babies and pregnancy.
Well, yeah. The end of the last episode, he busted into the OBGYN office. And then this is the continuation of that scene where Blade is busting in, the doctor knows he's caught, and immediately grabs the gun in his desk in front of a pregnant lady and her partner, blows his brains out right in front of them, without any sort of talk, no nothing, just like, all right, boom. And it's blood splattered all over the pictures of babies in the background. It's really gnarly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just a matter of, like, suicide bomber for the cause kind of thing. You know, he's a familiar for Van Scriver. That's what you do for your master.
Well, I mean, it's just like he kills himself with no hesitation, no nothing like that.
He's a good soldier.
It's almost as if, like,
he knows his
place. Almost as if it's a pedophile about to get caught, and they don't want to go to prison, don't want anything, and so, boom. And this doctor, we find out, has been doing some very nasty things.
He knows his place. Kill himself before he's caught.
He does. And as Blade leaves from the doctor's office, there's a note on his car. And, you know, it says nothing really meaningful to us. You know, it says, little man. And then he gets hit by a truck. Boom. Knocked unconscious and taken away by guys and masks and full body coverings. So you know they're vampires.
Yeah. So there's three plot lines in this entire episode. There's the Blade plot line with his old buddies, the Blood Pack, or as someone else nicknames them, the Lost Boys. There's Shen looking for Blade. And then there's Krista having to go to this blood ceremony that Shen gives her a whole bunch of blade serum for, because it requires her to basically, like, Elizabeth Bathory in a bathtub completely naked. It's kind of sexy, but, you know, that's literally all Krista does in this episode. She goes out with Chase, they meet Chase's ex-husband, she gets naked and in a bloody bathtub, credits. That's it. That's all Krista.
That is.
Shen spends the entire episode running around looking for Blade.
As he should. You know, Blade has been captured, and he is definitely in trouble. So Shen is just trying to find where he is, tracks down someone that actually knew the Bad Blood gang, who was paralyzed, and, you know, tracks him down and you know, ends up injecting Blade with the serum from a distance so that he's not as ravenous. And, a lot of the members of Bad Blood get killed by Blade. But the leader, Steppenrazor, he actually does not die. And Steppenrazor is played by Bokeem Woodbine. And Bokeem, he looks so familiar. And I know I've seen his face in a lot of different productions. And when I was looking at his IMDb, I knew that he was in a lot of things, but yes, he's been in a lot of Wu-Tang stuff. That's where I've seen him.
That did make sense, because I am familiar with the old school Wu-Tang Clan. I don't know what they're doing these days, but old school in the 90s Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah, and he was also in a more popular thing, Spider-Man Homecoming, as Herman Schultz.
Oh, that's right. He was the Shocker.
Yeah, he was.
Yes, he was. He was the second Shocker. The Shocker, as the Vulture was just like, ooh, the Shocker. Yeah, that's right. I completely forgot he was the Shocker. He was Shocker number two.
He was in Black Dynamite as Black Hand Jake, Jack. He's in a few episodes here and there of different shows like Bones and CSI Miami. But yeah, a lot of Wu-Tang stuff. Wu-Tang Clan, Careful, Click Click, Protect Your Neck, The Jump Off, The Gravel Pit. And he was in The Dead Presidents as well, as Cleon.
There's actually four plot lines, I forgot. There's also our Detective Larry Poindexter character, him looking for Blade, and then getting Boone's records.
Yes, Detective Collins is on the track of Boone. And even though Detective Collins doesn't have a lot to do in this episode, it still shows that he's on the path. He's tracking him. And, you know, they know that he's a bad cop. And
Boone's a bad cop, not this guy. This guy's a good cop.
No, not the detective, but Boone's the bad cop. And the detective is pretty much certain now that he is looking for a vampire. Mm. He hasn't vocalized it, but it definitely seems that way from the acting.
He's aware. He's in the know of what's going on. We get another reference to Charlotte. We don't know who Charlotte is yet, or rather you don't, I do. That's all we get of that. And, of course, Van Scriver loves when she calls. Because she's an elder, too, by the way. She's, like, one of those, like, you know, purebred, birthed-out vampires. I'm assuming it's not, like, vaginal. I'm going to assume it's, like, a C-section. I just got to believe.
I don't know.
I got to believe it's a C-section vampire. I don't think that's, like, if you die,
you wouldn't grow.
If you die, you should not be able to, like, to have a womb and create babies. I mean, Darla did it with Angel's Kid, but that was, like, mystical, like, you know, prophecy crap. I understand we live in a fictional world of fantasy, but this is why magic irritates people. It's just like, oh, magic is whatever you want it to be. It's how are you right? No, it needs limitations. Otherwise, it's so far-fetched, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't know how the mythology of the purebloods work in this show.
They never explain it.
If you were really a vampire, then you're dead.
Yeah.
You cannot gestate.
Correct.
Life.
Krista had to die to come back to life. You know what I mean? She was thrown off a building.
Yeah.
I don't
know how the purebloods work, but you know, we're just movie magic that, and you know, suspend our disbelief.
Yeah. Do vampires, when people are bitten and have all their blood drained,
and then their family has a funeral for them and buries them in the ground, wouldn't that negate them from becoming a vampire? Because as soon as the mortician removes their primary organs, like their heart and stuff like that, their liver, you know, things like that, which vampires still need to live, they should just crumble to dust and die, right? I don't know.
I mean, if you are a vampire, you wouldn't really need those organs anymore.
You need your heart.
Well, but do they?
Yes. How else? I mean, if you don't have a heart and you're a vampire, you're dead.
Well, vampires don't have heartbeats.
They need... Then what's the point of stabbing a vampire in the heart and killing them? A stake through the heart.
Well, I think originally the stake through the heart thing was because the heart was supposed to be your central part of your body and where your heart
chakra is. A stake through the heart is how you kill a vampire. That's the 99% of most of the vampire lore.
Yes. Yes. You stick a stake through the heart chakra.
Or a sword, a blade's case, which, by the way, Blades gets his sword destroyed in this and kind of leaves it there. And you're like, what the hell is this? I guess his sword is not indestructible.
Yeah, it was actually Shen that destroyed his sword.
Right, and he left it for Vince Scriver.
Yeah.
Which is, like, okay.
That's a tisk right there.
That doesn't make any sense. I don't know why that exactly happened.
So what we find out also is that Blade's remarkable tattoos on him aren't actually Blade tattoos. Instead, they are bad blood tattoos from his old gang. So that's the mark of his old gang, and his old gang is pissed off at him because none of the vampire houses will accept them because they are tainted by the Daywalker's blood.
So they're
feeling all lonely and decrepit because none of the other vampire houses treat them well, and they're just kind of on their own, and that's how they have been this entire time, and they are extremely pissed off at Blade.
FYI, for a long time, Blade cannot, and I don't think he can in the comics, but I guess he can. Blade could not turn people into vampires. He doesn't have that ability. He's not that kind of vampire. He's half vampire.
Mm-hmm.
He can go in sunlight, he's living, he can eat food, and things like that. You know what I mean? He's half vampire.
But in this show, he can turn people?
I guess so. In the most recent storyline called Blood Hunt, which was the big Marvel crossover that happened last summer, Blade got possessed by Varney the Vampire, who is the very first vampire in Marvel's canon. He is the vampire that turned Vlad Tepes into Count Dracula, and so on and so forth. The line starts with him. That is Marvel's history. And he has been dead off and on, and recently... In Blood Hunt, Blade was revealed to be the big bad villain. He takes down the Avengers and the Fantastic Four and causes a bunch of problems with the X-Men on Krakoa and things like that. And it's revealed that it's revealed in issue like 4 that it's not Blade. He's possessed by Varney. And he can turn people into vampires because he turns Black Panther and Miles Morales. And the only way Miles Morales can cure himself is he has to go to Wakanda and do the same thing that T'Challa did, is he has to go before his god. And T'Challa's god is the Panther god. Miles' god, since he's not African and he's not from Wakanda, it's a Nazi the Spider god.
What?
Yes. He has to go to Wakanda to meet a Nazi the Spider god. And he does. And a Nazi the Spider god takes the vampirism out of him just by snapping his fingers because he's a god. He puts him through a trial, and he's no longer a vampire. And he's like, FYI, little spider, you owe me one. And now that story is being collected right now, as he is a Nazi's champion in a Mortal Kombat style fighting thing that happens with their chosen champions. And he has to fight. And he has to fight Ares, the god of war, Thor, Hercules, and a couple other pantheon of gods. Because the Nazi's like too much of a trickster. He's like Loki, basically. And he's just like, I'm not getting in this fight. You're my champion because I saved your life. You're going to fight Thor and Ares and Hercules.
So we're just like, this has just gone off the rails.
No, this is FYI, a long, long time ago, Marvel Comics established like a Nazi as like part of the spider's web, the whole multiverse, you know, thing of like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? What came first, the spider or the man? You know, things like that. So Anansi the Spider God has never been that much of a character. It's been a pop-up like once in a blue moon. But over in Miles Morales, where, you know, he's African, Hispanic, Latino, so they've kind of dipped more into his African lore a little bit more than, say, Peter Parker, they have brought up Anansi the Spider God. And because of, again, what happened to him, he had to go to Wakanda, because it was the only place that could probably get the vampirism out of him. And the only way to do it was to go before the Anansi the Spider God, who, again, is right up there with Thor, Zeus, so on and so forth.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Comic books are way different than I would have imagined them going.
And it's called God War. And again, it's like a Mortal Kombat tournament, dude. You know, who is the king of the gods at this point? Because Thor doesn't want to be king of the gods, so they got to, I guess they got to do a new whole new king of the god thing, so.
All right.
Yeah. So, anyway. But yes, this whole thing about Blade turning people into vampires, I didn't like. Because he's part vampire, but he still has these abilities.
I also thought when they were bringing that up, like, what did Blade do when he was a toddler? You know, he would have had to eat, and he would have had this insatiable hunger that milk just wouldn't satisfy.
He was raised by his father, Richard Roundtree, Chaff. They say that. When he left his father, he was on the streets. Before he found Whistler, he was with this group. They're like his age, so they were all kids, basically. They're all runaway kids.
Hmm.
They're all... Later on, we're going to meet Blade's dad. So we find out Blade, after Blade's mom died in the hospital, supposedly, he was raised by his dad, you know, and, or in some lore, he's just raised in an orphanage or whatever, and he's a troubled kid. And then, you know, eventually Whistler finds him when he's a teenager. His only real father, parent figure he knows is Whistler, you know, until Whistler eventually dies, in the first movie and the third movie, because he comes back in the second movie. In the comics, I don't really know. He's raised by a guy named the Jazz Singer, so it's loosey-goosey, depending on, like, you know, what's been retconned. But yeah, we'll see the head of the Blood Pack, or the Lost Boys, as they're called, again later on. The plot with Chase and her ex-husband, I couldn't care less about, but this whole idea with, like, Krista and the whole bloodbath thing was interesting.
The more surprising thing is that, and I have it in my notes, is that the Bad Blood group gets Blade under the auspice of the Preacher guy, but yet they kill the Preacher, like, right away.
Yeah,
so
that didn't make any sense.
He didn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah, that seemed stupid. That seemed really dumb and a waste of time. I was just like, well, he's dead. It's like other characters on this show, which I'm not going to name, is like, what was the point of this character then? Because they're dead. But whatever. They need the guest of the week. Why don't we take a quick break and move on to our second episode?
Do you like vampires? Then please check out Colleen of Lotta Tale of the Damned, a brand new Kickstarter coming August 15th with art by Tim Vigil, Matt Slay, and variant covers by Chandra Akerblom, Heather Rose, and many more. You can find a link over on the Vlada of Dracula Tale page or one of the variant cover artists. Please consider following the Kickstarter today, which is a sequel to Vlada of Dracula Tale. If you missed Vlada of Dracula Tale, books from Vlada can be picked up on the Kickstarter to help the campaign reach its goal. Again, the Kickstarter launches August 15th. It can be found on Kickstarter at Colleen the Vampire or on the Vlada of Dracula page social media, on Twitter, Facebook, or the Radio Horror page or Instagram. Again, please consider helping us get to our goal of $7,000. Thank you.
The Zoom call is about to die because we were using it waiting for Larry, so I'll just...
Should we redo another Zoom
call? Why don't we take a quick break and move on to our second episode?
Blade, Season 1, Episode 5, The Evil Within, originally aired Wednesday, July 26, 2006. A bloody ritual visualizes for Krista where Boons is headed. Blade focuses on Vanessa Sims, who is very pregnant, as Krista searches for the Aurora vaccine. Marcus gets a surprise visit. Now, this is where we pick back up with that ritual. And I was very curious what that ritual was going to be because, you know, you see her step into a pool of blood that's kind of electrified. And then she puts her entire body underneath it. And then apparently she was down there for 5 hours and 9 minutes. And then she pops back up after having the vision. Now, that's not exactly how it was described in the description of the ritual in the previous episode. In the description, they talked about it being almost like a sweat lodge.
Mm.
And there is nothing being drained with Krista. You know, this is not a pool of her own blood. This is just a pool of blood. So, honestly, I don't know how it could ever tire out a vampire by being under this for 5 hours and 9 minutes, or 27 minutes, which is the average time that, you know, they say someone is under. Apparently, it gives someone quite a big thirst afterwards, but honestly, I don't see how it could.
I mean, you're in the blood. I'm assuming the blood is, like, good to drink, so why don't you be down there drinking?
I don't know. This just didn't make sense as, the how.
By the way, what city are we in with Krista, Blade, Shen, Van Scriber?
I think it was Detroit.
Okay, because Blade's car has Michigan license plates on it.
Okay.
I noticed that when he's stalking the pregnant girl with the dog and Eminem shows up.
Oh, the...
The white rapper.
The gentleman with the baseball bat.
Yeah, Eminem. I mean, he looks ridiculously stupid.
He's a drug dealer.
Yeah, well, he looks like he's trying to be like Eminem. You didn't get, like, Eminem, like, white rapper vibe off this guy?
Well, he's supposed to be a drug dealer, so...
And he's dressing like he's in the rap video. I mean, look at the way his coat is hanging off of him. Look at his hat. I mean, come on. It's all the stereotypes of, like, white people trying to dress like black rap stars.
Well, that actor is played... whose character in the show is named Drug Dude.
Yeah.
That actor is played by Christian Schrapp. And he was in an episode of Supernatural as
Anybody
Vince
good?
Parker. Very short acting career, so I think just a few things from 2006 to 2009. So
who's our girl with the dog?
Girl with the dog?
Yeah, the one that Blade's tracing, but unfortunately loses when the drug dealer holds him up. The new female character, the pregnant girl.
Oh, she was in a previous episode. That's Vanessa.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she was in a previous episode played by Sonia Bennett.
Oh, we didn't get into who Chase's husband is, the actor. Chase's ex-husband, sorry.
Chase's ex-husband, Frederick, is played by Steve Bakick. And Steve Bakick could be found in, let's see here, he was in X-Men 2, X-Men United as Dr. Hank McCoy.
Oh, so he's on the TV screen. There's a quick shot in the bar when Mystique is trying to get some information about a guy, she gets drunk or whatever, and then lures to the bathroom with promises of sex. Then she drugs him or whatever, turns into her Mystique form or whatever. But while they're in the bar on the TV, you see Dr. Hank McCoy being interviewed in his human form, which you could say is, okay, he's wearing an image inducer. Because in X-Men 3, you know, and then later on, like in Days of Future Past, Kelsey Grammer, who plays Beast, is... all furry and blue.
Steve Bakick can also be found on a few made-for-TV movies. It's a series called Garage Sale Mystery.
Right.
From 2015 to 2017, it seems, or 2018. Sale Mystery, a lot of them, as Jason Shannon.
We've also finally get to meet Charlotte. Did you think Charlotte was a little girl, like Claudia?
Well, as soon as I saw her, it seemed like a Claudia person, but, you know, then they're saying that she's pure blood and has never seen the daylight, so...
She ages slowly kind of thing. Mavis, you know who Mavis is, right? Hotel Transylvania?
Yeah.
She's 118 years old.
Okay.
So she's obviously, you know, born a vampire baby to vampire parents. Dracula loses his wife and obviously keeps his daughter sheltered for the rest of her life until she turns 118. So this is the same thing. I mean, she's not a little girl. She actually looks older than Claudia, too. She probably is like 12 or 13, you know what I mean? Kirsten Dunst was... Kirsten Dunst was actually 12 or 13 playing 10, I think. She's like our age. She's 45 today, Kirsten Dunst. So that means when she was cast as Claudia to play her, she was our age, which was like 12 or 13, playing 10.
Right.
Which is very easy, obviously, unless you're 18. You can't be 18 and playing 10. That's... physically doesn't look correct, even for a guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At some point, the growth spurt happens.
True.
So with this girl, this reminds me of, like, Let the Right One In, but whereas that is not, like, an ancient, you know, that's, like, a vampire stuck in a child's body. There's a movie called Human is a Vampire Seeking Consenting Suicidal Person. Very similar. Also, Vampire Born is like over 100 years old, but is, you know, 16 because they age slowly.
So Charlotte is played by Emily Hurst. And Emily has been in a few things, a lot more as a young woman. She was in X2, X-Men United as an uncredited ice cream girl.
Oh.
She was also in Smallville as Maddie Van Horn.
Oh.
Battlestar Galactica Razor TV movie as the child in the cage. A lot of little bit parts.
Oh, I remember that. There's a scene where Adama, it is a flashback to Adama's days in the first Cylon War. Did you ever watch Battlestar Galactica?
I did, way back.
Okay, so did you ever watch the Razor movie?
Sure.
Okay, so long story short, Adama, the captain.
Sure.
Okay, so long story short, Adama, the captain, you know, the commander, the admiral.
Mm-hmm.
This is his story during the first Cylon War.
Okay.
So before the piece where the Cylons basically just disappeared, you know what I mean, until they showed up looking, you know, 10 out of 10 hot babes, and Lucy Lawless and so on and so forth. So before the bioorganic kind of Cylons came about, and you know who I'm talking about, the admiral, as a lieutenant, he finds a laboratory with a bunch of people hooked up in it, including like some kids. Yeah. And then at the end of the whole thing, when, you know, he reports back, doesn't understand what he finds or whatever, we meet Six, but without her human skin on. She looks like the robot from Deus Ex Machina, if you've ever seen that film.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Like, and by the way, no human face either. So she's all glowy and honeycombed skin. You know, it's really creepy. But that's what apparently the Cylons look like under their human, like, organic skin. Kind of like Terminators. Huh. You know, Terminators have that human skin. So it can grow back in case they get injured and things like that. Science fiction magic, obviously. Yeah, so that's cool that she just continues her career. Is she still doing stuff today? Anything in 2025?
No. She actually stopped acting. It seemed her last acting role was in 2011.
Oh, so she probably went off to college and got herself a life. Kind of like, you know who she reminds me of a lot of? Emma Watson. She looks like Emma Watson. She could be from the same part of England. You know what I mean? I've seen a lot of girls that look like Emma Watson that are British, and someone's like, oh, that's because they're from this part of Britain, and a lot of the girls do look like that.
Well, she was born in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
So maybe then I'm completely wrong. Okay. What do you think of the cool ancient drawings that our detective finds?
Interesting.
Yeah?
I tried to figure out what the name of that German book was, but I couldn't figure it out.
No, that's fine. I do like the fact that Vince Scriber just feels like he's got to like listen to this little pipsqueak girl, and he's like not into it whatsoever.
Yeah.
This little girl's going to tell me what to do, even though she's like 1,000 years older than me. It's an interesting power play dynamic, I think.
Agreed. And her being carried around by this big brute named Thorn, it almost seems like one of those bodyguard protectors.
I definitely see it as like a slave thing, yeah. Like, this is like, she shouldn't have to walk around unless her legs are broken, and we don't know that. I don't think they are, because she has a big attack scene in another episode, scurrying around the ceiling like a spider. She's definitely not broken. But it is definitely like, I'm carrying my little porcelain doll with me because I'm a big muscle man. You know, it's interesting. There's a comic book called Vamp where a vampire, she's like 300 years old, and she hires the mousiest little mopey girl with big rimmed glasses. You know what I mean? Doesn't have any friends, has some debt because of school, and she wants her to buy her a cigarettes and vodka because she looks like she's 10 and she can't. And she also, and batteries for her vibrator. And she's like, what? Ew! Oh my god, I'm not going to do that. You're like 10. She's like, no, I'm 300 and I get my pleasure where I can. Do you want me to kill you or are you going to help me? And she makes a constant point of like, you know what? You're such a loser. You're going to take you under my wing and fix your life for you. Because it's so pathetic how you run your life. it's very funny. It's very tongue-in-cheek. It's very adult. But I absolutely love it. And I heard that they're finally doing a sequel.
So in this, we do see the Dr. Vonner's funeral, the OBGYN, his funeral. And so since the funeral is in the daylight, it's only humans that are attending. However, the pregnant woman, Vanessa, is also in attendance. And she seems to have a big blue spot on her belly where Blade is using his thermal glasses. And he's questioning, is that a vampire? What is in that belly? Because that should be a heat signature of a living thing, and it's not.
His people just get back to me saying, I reached out to Larry twice. Did he not show up for the Zoom call? No. So I told him we need to reschedule. Like, did you give him the correct Zoom call? It's the only one in the email, so I don't know what happened, but I digress.
Okay, we'll just have to get that rescheduled.
Yeah. I also thought it was funny, Blade trying to get through the airport security.
He was actually very good getting through airport security. And when he got to the German side, the customs agent hands him a bag, says that he's doing good work, that he has full support, hands him a bag with guns and a bomb in it.
Yikes.
Yeah. Like, the custom agents are on his side. Like, he's, you know, very well accepted in Germany, heading into Berlin. The bad cop Boone, is transported into a coffin with a waitress as a snack.
Yummy.
Offering himself and the waitress to talk to the heads of the houses. Like, he's wanting to talk to the purebloods, and he doesn't quite understand that he is just a lowly transfer. Like, mm-hmm. there is nothing special about him, and he will not get an audience with a pureblood, because that's, for one, dangerous to the purebloods, and two, this guy all across the vampire world has been causing trouble because he's being messy.
And poor Chase, unfortunately, gets trapped between a hot place and a hotter place. What does she do? Go outside, get blown up by the sun, or stay inside, get blown up by a bomb?
Well, she does what she can, and she stays inside. You know, once Blade takes Vanessa out of that laboratory that she was locked in.
She's got 12 episodes on her. She'll be fine.
Okay.
Come on, she's the sexy female bad girl of the show. They're not going to kill her off. She's got plot armor.
It definitely looks like she died, because, you know, that explosion goes off Blake gets Vanessa, and it really looked like she was, you know, turned into ash.
No, she'll be fine. She stays, she's not so hot for a while, let's just say. Get it? Because she is hot, but then she gets hotter, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Smells like fried chicken for a while.
The House of Lycan, which is the house that the ritual was conducted in, they don't drink human blood.
Yeah,
they
that's
drink
so weird.
Cloned blood.
That's and I, so weird.
I think if they had Blade serum, then they would take the serum instead. They seem to not want to actually cause death.
Interesting. Yeah, I thought that was fascinating.
They are like the lower echelon of the houses. You know, the one that all the other houses look down on, and they kind of look down on the other houses because they don't want to kill anyone. They survive on the clone blood, and they're wanting to get converts from the other houses to join their, you know, house or cult, if you will, in order to show that the vampires can live a different way. And none of the other vampire houses take any of this as, you know, this is just a weirdo faction. And that seems to be all it is. Just a weirdo faction that this ritual takes place at. And Krista is not going to be a convert to their religion, their practice. So, yeah, I guess that's about it for the House of Lycan.
If we could clone blood in the real world that we live in, mm-hmm. I think that would revolutionize everything. But you would need, like, an artificial body to put the blood into, right?
Meaningful advances in blood substitutes.
Like, which president was it? Was it Bush or Obama that banned cloning?
I think it was Bush.
Okay. So, we can't clone people, but that doesn't mean that applies to the rest of the world. And scientists there, it's like a page 12 in the newspaper, have gone to other countries because they have the technology and the know-how to clone people. And they're like, well, that applies to the United States of America. That does not apply to me. So I'm leaving the country to go to a country that has cloning facilities and the technology and the money to continue my work. And a lot of scientists did do that. They left for neutral countries or countries that, you know, with, let's just say, ethical politics to pursue this kind of science. Is it wrong? No, I don't think so, because they're not hurting anybody. But, yeah, no, I get the science fiction aspect of it all. Look at Alien Resurrection. You know, when Ripley finds the room when she sees her 8 tattoo, she finds the room of 1 through 7. That's what people have problems with. They think that's going to happen. We're going to have clones that we have to kill.
I know if I had a clone, I'd eventually have to kill that person.
Would you then do necrophilia stuff with their body?
Maybe.
Would that be... Well, but think about it, though. If you have sex with your clone, isn't that just masturbation?
I think so.
Okay.
You know, I could only stand if my clone and I, like if I was to do like a multiple man thing where I separate off myself into a clone and then I can come back and merge and then I'll have all my memories merged as well. That's the only way that I could sustain that, because as soon as the clone deviated from my path of direction in my life, they would become a new person that is based off of me, but it has their own autonomy. And eventually, once that divide gets farther enough, they are now my enemy, because I am the only person that can defeat myself. And so I would then have this enemy that is my clone, and I would have to defeat that person, and then may the best Zeneca win. And that's why, like, as much as I think I can do is all the things I needed to do in the world, if I had a clone, the only way it would work out is if I could come back and join myself. Yeah.
Would you just clone yourself for body parts?
If I knew going into it that I'd get, say, a kidney taken out and then I die directly after, would I sacrifice myself for myself? Probably. Until that clone was more autonomous and then would want to live on their own. And then they might say, F you to the original me. And then they would run off and I would die. So you'd have to do it right away. Like, I would have to be cloned, and then you take the body part and then kill me before I realize that there was another option.
In Superman, in the reboot in the 80s, they came up with the backstory of Krypton about why it is the way they are. And the backstory they came up with, and this was, by the way, used on the Krypton TV show, was... Mm-hmm. The clones, there was a lot of cloning going on Krypton years ago for body parts. One of the heads of the houses on Krypton cloned her own son to maturity just to have relationships with him. Used his clone parts to help her husband.
Oh.
Yeah, it got really weird. Now, on Krypton, they try to basically do, like, Superman, but with, like, Game of Thrones, you know? And that's how the Krypton TV show, which got 2 seasons, which we could cover one day. It was a fun show. It had only 2 seasons. It was unceremoniously canceled. And honestly, I think, again, it was a really good show. But they outlawed cloning, and then they outlawed regular conception to create life. And basically, it was just now DNA splicing in a test tube, and
the fun out of it.
And well, yeah. And they genetically engineered everyone on Krypton to not be able to leave the planet. And when Jor-El found out about the tremors and the possible coming of the explosion of the planet, he made sure that his son could get off the planet. And hence why the backstory of, like, why he is susceptible to, like, kryptonite. Because he's not born on Krypton. He was a fetus on Krypton, and then when the gestation womb opened up, he came out, he was born on Earth.
Okay.
Still solar charged by the yellow sun, superpowers the whole 9 yards, but this explains, like, the whole thing with kryptonite now.
All right.
Yeah. Because it's like, why would something from your own planet kill you? You're a Kryptonian. It never made a lot of sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So... it's like, okay, so kryptonite is the rock that your planet's made of. Why is that deadly to you? You came from a, you arrived on Earth in sometimes a crystal, and sometimes a rock, and sometimes a ship. All stuff from your planet, you know, from your periodic tables. Mm-hmm. Why would that be deadly here? Makes a lot of sense, in my opinion, that they came up with that neat idea of, like, the whole thing with kryptonite. And that continuity is still kind of intact of, like, the whole, like, you know, the genetic muckety-muck of the Kryptonians and what they were trying to do. So it's evolved more into, like, the more traditional, like, you know, let's get him off the planet and he'll go and, you know, use his powers hopefully for good on this planet.
Yeah. In this episode, Krista breaks into the vaccine containment unit by wiggling her way through a drain pipe that is way too huge than you would ever have made for a drain pipe. But she breaks into the vaccine thing and she, you know, confronts Marcus with the vaccine, and he says that it's incomplete. And that had she saw and had Fritz survived long enough, he would have started degrading. So the vaccine is not complete. It is a stepping stone towards the Aurora future. But even though she's tempted to take it to prove him wrong, she does not, considering that he might be telling the truth. Because she is desperate to actually get back to her living life, and she won't accept that she will never come back from being a vampire. And that's all the notes that I have for this episode.
That's it for these two episodes of Blade, the series. One was better than the other. The episode with there was, like, plot elements from one I liked in this one, but I didn't like the whole blood pack thing from the last episode.
Yeah, I kind of like that. It gives a little bit more background as to how Blade grew up in his young teenage years.
It's just, they were uninteresting characters.
Well, they died pretty quickly, so they didn't waste much time for you.
No, I mean, his backstory, the only thing I care about with his backstory is, like, how Whistler raised him and got him to curb his anger management issues and get him the serum.
That in the movie.
We just get told it. We don't ever see that story. You know what I mean? If there was a story to be told of, like, the young Blade being raised by Whistler, I would like that story. I would love that in a Marvel movie if they ever got around to figuring out what the hell they're going to do with Blade, you know? But I guess there will only ever be one Blade, like Wesley Snipes said in Deadpool and Wolverine.
Honestly, he is the best Blade.
Yeah, this is not... Kirk is okay. He's just... It's not Wesley Snipes.
Yeah.
So, and that's not a bias because he didn't come on the show. Just...
No. The script doesn't give him a lot. And he's playing it as well as he can. But honestly, Wesley Snipes added so much to the character with just his pure ambiance that... As much as Sticky Fingers is trying so hard to recreate that, it's coming off more as kind of obstinate. You know?
Gotcha. You can find us over on the Dead TV Podcast Facebook page. I found a bunch of cool magazine articles about Blade and such over there, which is kind of interesting. No headlining front page articles, but there was, like, an article in a magazine with... what's her name? Who was the Wasp from the Ant-Man and the Wasp films on the cover? She was on Lost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That actress who just recently announced she's retiring. Michael Douglas is retiring and she's retiring.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You can find us on Twitter or Blue Sky, Radio of Horror, Instagram. Send us an email at radioofhorror@gmail.com, or you can send us a... Leave us a review on Amazon, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or anywhere else you can find the Dead TV Podcast. And like I said, we got a cool interview coming up. We'll have a bigger announcement about it shortly. And we will be on Blade up through till, I think, like Halloween, I believe.
Perhaps.
And then switching over to Mr. Zeneca's Dark Crystal. Labyrinth.
Dark Crystal.
That keeps going back and forth. Dark Crystal. Ah! Did you get that soundtrack?
Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. It's coming.
Oh, okay, good. Cool. You'll have to do a review of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta pick up a copy of it as well. So, I don't know if I should rewatch the movie Dark Crystal before watching the series, because I haven't seen the movie since I was a kid, honestly.
I'm going to rewatch the movie, but I know we're actually reviewing the movie after the Age of Resistance show.
Right.
So you, how about I pre-watch this time, and then you stay in the dark instead of the other way around, like we usually do it.
I remember the film. I just haven't watched it since I was a child, so.
So don't watch it, and we'll watch the prequels, and then you can watch the movie with me, and then refresh your memory.
That sounds good.
Okay.
And we'll be back in 2 weeks with another exciting episode of Blade here on the Dead TV Podcast.
Good night.